All right. Welcome to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Elwood Fantasy Football League podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It is great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I am doing pretty well this week, personally.
Well, when you log a W, it certainly helps, right?
It makes a big difference when you did that win column. Like, can you imagine being 0-3 right now?
I was there
last year. It was awful. Oh. And we do have a couple of teams who are 0-3, a couple of loyal listeners, so shout out to them. Can't imagine being where you are right now. I've been there. It's not fun,
sure.
But it's tough. It is tough. But sure. The good news is we do have a lot of parity this year in the lead. We do not have any 3-0 teams. So even though
right.
you are 0-3, you are not totally out of it, which is good for the lead, good for everyone to still be out there fighting, feeling like they have a chance every week.
I think that's rather remarkable that we have two 0-3 teams and no 3-0 teams. The fact for that to work out statistically doesn't make a lot of sense in my brain. I would think that there would have to be 1-3-0 for that to be possible, but clearly not. And so you had breakfast with one of our 0-3s this morning. How's his morale? How's his demeanor?
He told me, and hopefully we'll get to talk to him soon, but he told me that he feels like his team is like a freight train where he just needs it to build momentum. And then at the end of the season, it will be chugging along, just bulldozing everything in its path.
Ah, well.
he's got some injury issues. He's got some suspension. Well, not suspension. Some holdout. Some fake injury
yep.
issues with Jonathan
yep.
Taylor.
Yep.
But yeah, he feels like there's just a couple of keys that if they can turn just right for him, he's gonna be right there. So he definitely still has hope in his eyes. Though he probably doesn't want me to say that. If we get to talk to him on the podcast, it's probably going to be a much different song of, you know, he's got to
sure.
Really, you know, downplay his team and give him the motivational speech and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
At this point, I think, you know, he's tremendous, or he's historically always been afraid of the podcast in lieu of turning his whatever streak around. And in this case, I think he could benefit from it. And
right.
regarding his freight train analogy, did you inform him that he's lost momentum every week? Like, he started with 150 points and I think 130 or so, and then last week was under 100. So I'm not sure how the freight train analogy really carries. Maybe it's building up energy by like conserving it on the front end. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, you never want to beat an analogy to death, but maybe the freight train was coming into the station to start the season. Like,
uphill.
There was still a lot of momentum. There was a lot of momentum from last season. It was coming in, slowing down, and then now it's going to start building.
It's like a roller coaster that's ticking up over the peak. It's tick, tick,
yeah,
tick,
yeah.
Tick.
That's
okay.
right. But
all
those
right.
last few ticks are the slowest. And
that's right.
You think it's all broken, and then all of a sudden, just watch out.
Whoosh, put your hands in the air. So... we're looking at
nice Emperor's New Groove reference. I got it.
Yep. The more I can slip Emperor's New Groove in
right,
my life,
don't
want to
move right past that.
So we've got an additional 0-3-er, and that's Jared Lorenz. And I also like to get Jared on because Charles is forever the optimist, you know, and he'll tell you that this is all part of the plan. Jared, I think, is typically a little bit more glass half empty. At least in fantasy football, not necessarily in life. And he might be a little bit more of a realist when it comes to my team is terrible. If anything, he's the Eeyore when his team is sucking or doing really well, but not well enough in his eyes. What do you think about his 0-3?
You know what? I was just looking at the points scored on the season, and I'd say both the 0-3 teams could probably say they're a little bit unlucky in that, you know, how the schedules worked out, because we do have 5 teams in the league who have not yet scored 400 points this season, and 3 of them are 2-1, and the other 2 are 0-3. So it's like that, you know, there's a lot of luck in how the schedule works out.
Right.
Where I'm sure if, you know, things, you know, you looked at it in a different way, things broke a different way, these 0-3 teams could be at least have 1 win or possibly 2, like some of the others who, you know, aren't among the points scored leaders on the season.
Yeah.
So always interesting to look at it that way. But yeah, I think, you know, there's a common theme of some injuries going on where Charles has had Austin Eckler out and Jared has had Cooper Kupp out. And anytime you lose a, you know, top five player in the draft like that, you're probably going to feel some impacts. It's hard to replace them, you know, right away anyway. So, yeah, we will all suffer from injuries, and then soon it'll be bye weeks, and we can all only hope to be so lucky as to not endure that for extended periods of time.
Yep, that's right. And this week, Jared did put up a fairly respectable average score, I would say, at 140 points. He would have beat about 40% of our league this week. He played you. You got your first win with 164 points. This was in spite of Tua going off in Miami in one of the highest scoring games of all time. And you were padded out because of your depth. You have a Houstonian actually going to town. And congrats on Tank Dell doing his thing for you. You also had some good points scored from the top end of your stack, including Lamar Jackson and Ford. And I think Diggs did pretty good. We talked about A-Chain. Did you, I think he was on the bench in most leagues in the entirety of the world. I know you don't have him in this league, but you said you have him in others.
Yeah, I have him in one other. And, I did, he was definitely on the bench last week. And honestly, it's hard for me to decide if I should start him again this week.
Yeah.
You know, they're in Buffalo this week, a little different than being at home against Denver. So, you know, I don't want to like be chasing points, but I mean, the Miami running backs combined for 8 touchdowns last week, 4 for Mostert and 4 for Achane. It's just crazy. So I don't know what world we're living in with Miami. I'm not really sure how to handle it. Speaking of Miami running backs and Mostert, we've had several trades this week, and Mostert was one of them. I thought that was a big trade, and that was for Charles to acquire Mostert and give up one of his remaining quarterbacks. So now he's down to one quarterback. So it'll be interesting to see if that helps Charles now that he has kind of utilized his draft capital and quarterbacks to acquire DK Metcalf and Raheem Mostert now. We'll see if that'll help his team out in the long run as well. But we've had a couple other trades this week. What did you think about them?
I was excited to see that kind of movement go along. It just made me really encouraged that our league is like respectable when it comes to trades. I feel like there are some seasons where, you know, we were more cynical or a little bit more guarded overall. And so any trade, if we were involved in any trade, was suspicious. And if we weren't involved with it, any trade was collusion or unfair, or we were watching other people. There was a little bit of FOMO, but it was disdained because, you know, I don't want to see other teams doing well or being successful or making moves that, you know, there's all that potential in any league to have toxicity around trade at the behest of how involved your managers are too. And it was fun to see these big of trades early on, particularly from teams that weren't necessarily like setting themselves up to trade from the draft. Not to say that that wasn't a big trade with involving Charles, but more like seeing a trade between the Chris's, between Chewy and Chris. And it was a big two-way trade with four pretty sizable players, you know. That really shows, I think, that our league is interested in having profitable discussions that is not just out to be inherently like, let's try to screw other people over, or let's be unrealistic about what we have. Let's just try to make the most about what we have and turn it into what we need. And I think that was indicated in some of these movements.
I think that's right on the money. And I think with all these trades, when I saw them come across, I just kind of like nod my head of like, yeah, mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I don't know which team won in this
right.
trade, actually.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Where a lot of times you see a trade like, oh man, what was, you know, so-and-so thinking?
Yeah. It's like, oh, clearly he's done for the season. Okay. He's mailing it in. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're absolutely right. In years past, that's how a lot of trades looked, was You know, we can't say the ape word again anymore, but you know, it looked like someone was getting screwed in an offer as soon as they came across of like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, is this really what you want to do? Because like, do you know like the player you're getting, or do you know the player you're giving up? But now it seems like everyone kind of knows what they're doing. I think mm-hmm. we saw that in the draft. We're seeing that in the results so far this year with the parity in the lead, and we're seeing that in the trade market as well. I feel like everyone knows what they're doing. So, I mean, if you're blowing out trade offers, hoping like, oh, I hope I can sneak this one past them, I don't think you're going to find that in our lead anymore.
Yeah. It's also, I think, a perspective in value, because I'm trying to put words to what you and I are commenting on here and what we're noticing. And I've seen it in my conversations offline with trade potential. I experienced it this morning. A member of our league reached out to me and said, hey, are you thinking about this on your team? Meaning, like, is this a potential long-term problem for you? And are you looking to cover it? And my response was, yeah, absolutely. I've got two problems that you can clearly see on my team. I've got a long-term quarterback issue and a short-term RB2 issue, is what I told him. And he was interested in helping me out with the quarterback position, but it would involve pulling my actual RB2 out from under me. And he noticed that in the middle of our conversation and then backed down on it and then went to go make another move and readdress the trade so he could actually patch my need at the same time as patching his. I'm like, see, that right there is working together to promote the best for both of our teams. And I was blown away by that because he was considering my problems as valid as opposed to trying to attack my interest. And I feel like in leagues past, it was always about, in order to win a trade, I have to convince you that your interests are invalid and that you're probably stupid for believing them. And that may work.
Yeah. Or it just always comes at it from the lens of, well, I want this player from your team, so you should give him to me, and I don't care what it does to your team.
Right.
But I've had so many trade offers where I look at it and say, did you think about what that does to my team if I were to accept this? Like, you're leaving me with, you know, no running back, or like, that doesn't make my starting lineup better. Like, sure, that might balance out my, you know, difference between my running backs and my wide receivers, but
you're getting three players, Pete. You're getting three that I don't have room on my bench for.
Like, yeah. Or you know, it's like if you give me an offer where it's like a, you know, straight up running back for a wide receiver, and it's like, you know, pretty clear the wide receiver is better. Either way, it's a player I'm going to put in my flex. Well, I'm going to keep the wide receiver who I already have, who's already in the flex, instead of taking on the running back who's not better, mm-hmm. who would just go in the same position. So it's like, you know, just that thought process of what does this do for the other guy's team? How can I, you know, help his team while also, you know, benefiting as well? That's the way it's supposed to work. So love to hear it.
Yep. Well, I'd say all the evidence is pointing to that. So, so far, so good. Other things of note coming out of week three, congrats to Fleming for a really big, we had three really big scores this week, and one of us three had the unfortunate disluck to be matched up against the other, and that was Chewy Clark, who scored 188 points up against me, and I just barely topped him out. He nearly came back on Monday night, which I was already nervous about that. You guys gave me grief for being nervous about that, as if I was pandering. And I feel like there's some hindsight here just that says, I feel like I was a little justified. And when I was doing the math going, if this happens and this happens, this may not hold. And plus, it's Monday night. And we know how me and Monday night comebacks have a tendency
to... That's very true. There's a history.
Yeah. So some big scores there. Anything else from week three you wanted to point out?
It was definitely a high-scoring week. I think last time we talked, it was after week one, which was a very low-scoring week. But it's funny how the matchups played out, where it ended up being like a really close week for the most part in terms of all our matchups. Scott won by 8, Michael won by 5, you won by 5. You know, I won by 24, which is not super close, but that's pretty close.
Mm-hmm. And then Derek.
Derek won by 5. And the Jared blew out Charles. So I'd say, you know, Fleming beating Charles was the only blowout. Yeah. But it's just funny how the the matchups played out because, like, Michael won by 5, but he scored 113. You won by 5, but you scored 193. Derek won by 5, he scored 157. So it's like the scores were all over the place. And it's just the kind of like, depending on how you look at it, either the right teams or the wrong teams were matched up against each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that just shows how efficient we are as managers, right? You don't want to, you pull your starters, you know, in the fourth quarter if you're, you know, got it solidified, unless you're Miami. So I think that's what's happening.
Keep them healthy. Save
exactly.
Later.
Exactly. So I think, you guys are doing a good job, like just winning enough. Excuse me. All right. Well, shall we take a look at week 4 here as we continue to evaluate some early squish happening inside the league this year?
Yep. Let's jump into it. You know, with the lack of 3-0 teams, we got some really big matchups this week where several teams with the same record against each other. We've got 4 matchups between teams with the same record. And then the other 2 matchups are 0-3 teams looking to create some ultimate squish against 2-1 teams. So a lot of interesting matchups across the board here. So let's just jump in. We'll go to Brock and Michael's matchup first. They're both 2-1. And I think if I remember, Brock is one of the teams that has scored well so far this season, and Michael is a 2-1 team that has not scored as well so far this season. But after Thursday night, Michael does have a little bit of a head start here because Brock played Aaron Jones, who I think ended up not playing a full workload and only scored 2.4 points. So that creates a little hole in the lineup, and Michael got a decent performance from Jordan Love, who kind of salvaged his day with a good second half after looking really bad in the first half.
Yeah, yes, he did. And because of that, I think that this game is a little bit further of a spread in terms of head-to-head matchup than it should have been in projection because of Aaron Jones' score or lack thereof. But otherwise, this is a pretty tight matchup. Taking a look at the lineup, I think that this is a situation where Brock has a lot of potential in his wide performance this week. And I think that I was looking at Mike Evans going up against New Orleans this week. I think that's actually a really good matchup and has a potential to be really strong for Brock. I think this is Brock's game to lose despite having the hole to fill, because I don't see I see some of the positions that Fitz has relied upon are questionable at best, like Kamara, even Calvin Ridley this week. So I think that Brock will edge this one out despite having the offset from Jones early on. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I am with you. It definitely looks like one that I would lean more Brock's way, even though right now Michael is projected to win by a dozen points or so. You know, there's question marks in Michael's lineup with Kamara coming back, and, you know, Cole Kmet, is, you know, he actually ever going to do anything? And so I think we got some question marks on both sides of it, but I'd say there are fewer question marks on Brock's side. It's like his question mark is already out of the way, and it wasn't a great answer, but
it's not so much that it's a guaranteed loss, right?
Right, right. So, yeah, you know, before Thursday night game, I definitely would have said Brock, but now it seems like much more of a coin flip.
Right. Yep. All right. Well, I think we should go straight to the other head-to-head matchup that I'm pretty excited about. In fact, I would call this the game of the week, and that is between you and Chewy. Both of you are 1-2. You're not the other 2-1 team, which should probably technically be the game of the week. But let me explain why. The other 2-1 teams going up against each other this week are Derek and Chris Windsor. And right now, they are, in fact, I don't remember ever seeing this in Sleeper, but they are 50-50, according to the actual percentage here, because they are projected within not even about a point. But their score is projected low. It's under 140. And so this probably would be worthy discussion of the game of the week, except I think that coming back from 1-3 has historically been a lot more difficult in our league. And I think that 1-4 is nearly a death sentence. And so I think that this game for you and Chewy is extremely significant for the two of you, more so than losing to a 2-1 team if you're 2-1. That's why I would argue that you and Chris Clark have the game of the week this week. And looking at Chewy's team, he's got a good leg going in that he traded for Brown, and it paid off for him this week in 16 points. He also had about 9.5 points coming from his tight end. And so he's got a kickstart, but it's not out of the projection of what to be expected. So right now y'all are about 7 points spread in projection. You've got a slight advantage. You've got Lamar Jackson up top. I am really excited about your running back core this week, and particularly Joe Mixon. I'm excited. I think that he might have a bigger week than he has the past couple. Stephon Diggs is going to crush it in Miami, especially if it's another shootout. I'm looking at Chewy's team coming off of a very, very big hot win at 180 points, and I think that he's set probably not for that high, but maybe north of 150. So I hope that you guys are both ready to duke it out. But I believe that you have what it takes, Pete, this week to at least do your best to keep up. But I think that, again, I think this would be Chewy's game to lose. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's tough when I think we both, you know, Chewy and I both come off pretty good scores last week. Mm-hmm. And I think this one is going to be close. I am cautiously optimistic looking at some of the matchups. I'm grateful that, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown only scored 16.6 last night, and Sam Laporta was under 10, you know, just barely. So, like, good performances, but not like I'm feeling like I'm in a big hole here. Yeah. You know, a couple of question marks for Chewy from my point of view. Like, he traded for Brian Robinson, and he's going, you know, at Philadelphia this week. I feel like that's a really tough matchup. And then he's got Brandon Cooks playing New England, where I don't know if the Cowboys are going to have to throw the ball very much there and if it'll go to Brandon Cooks if they do. And then he's got Amari Cooper, who has been great, but it seems like Deshaun Watson can't really throw the ball yet this week.
Yeah.
That could be problematic for Cooper playing at home versus Baltimore. So there's some question marks on Chewy's side that give me a little bit of optimism. Not that I feel like my team's set up to do awesome. I hope it's a big week for Diggs playing this Miami in a shootout. But you never know how these things are going to go. But I lean towards my side on this one, though, you know, don't want to anger any fantasy duds or anything.
Yeah, no, you got to be careful with that. But I do think this is going to be a really fun one. I'm going to be watching closely this weekend. And good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to let's look in more detail at Chris Windsor. Yes. And Derek's matchup. You know, I think, like you said, 2-1 teams, they are projected very close. Both have basically 137 points. Chris has some new players. Team got a little bit of a facelift this week. Derek is getting Jaylen Waddle back this week, who he did not have last week and won anyway. I think this is going to be a really, really close game. I kind of lean towards Derek's side of it as I take a quick look through the players here. Unless Jalen Hurts really just pushes out a huge performance against Washington, but I don't think he'll need to for the Eagles to dominate that game. I like Derek to come out on top in this one, even if it's not going to be a huge shootout between these two teams. I think Derek will grind out another close victory, which he already has a couple so far this season.
Yeah. I'm excited about Derek's wides this week, namely Lamb and Thielen. Thielen has been super, super hot and is up against Minnesota at home this week. There's some question about his status, but I think they're probably just resting him late this week. And over on Chris's side, Chris has been working on rebuilds, and he has been a part of a couple of these trades and free agent moves. He's working really hard, I think, to tell you the truth. like he's putting in the time to really build up his team. Jalen Hurts is playing Washington this week. I'm not sure what I think he's going to do there. He's kind of been hot and cold. So I'd be curious to see how he does away this week. Josh Jacobs has been a big question mark and has not been performing the way he would hope to in his RB2 spot, and his RB1 spot has been worse in Javonte Williams over at in Denver. So I think where Chris is going to get hurt this week is in his running back spots. And I'm going to put my money on Derek.
I'm with you. One thing we saw with Jalen Hurts and the Eagles last year is when they had these big wins is he would score like 25 points in the first half because they're throwing and scoring, but then they would just like totally stop, take the foot off the gas in the second half. With how poor Washington looked against Buffalo last week at home, being at Philadelphia, I feel like that's kind of what we'll see this week, but you never know. Didn't expect, there were like three crazy upsets last week in the NFL with Houston and Indianapolis and Arizona winning, but so you never know. Washington should beat Philadelphia, but I doubt it.
All right, maybe we hop over to Scott and Jared Fleming, the other team that's coming off of a very, very hot high score week.
Let's do it. Always tough to evaluate Scott's team. Yeah. It makes it difficult on us. He's got three holes in his lineup to start the week. So I think he probably won't be playing Deshaun Watson this week, and he'll play Dak Prescott instead.
Mm-hmm.
Probably slide in Brandon Ayuk and maybe Elijah Moore as another wide receiver flex in there. I guess he needs a tight end. Let's see, who's got a tight end? Njoku or Freiermuth? Probably Freiermuth at tight end. So actually, both these guys have a couple of players on their bench who look pretty good. So, good depth here from Scott and Jared, which makes sense because I liked both their drafts. And so they still look like very complete teams. So these are two of the top three draft grades going against each other. They're both 2-1 and they're both scoring really well. So I feel good about that from the draft analysis perspective. Jared's got, I think he's got Tony Pollard in a really great spot. He's got Devontae Adams in a really great spot. Gabe Davis and DeAndre Hopkins are both in pretty good spots as well, and so is Miles Sanders. So I like the way Jared Fleming's team is shaping up this week, and I would favor his side. I think Scott maybe shot his shot a little bit last week with Achane scoring and Ja'Marr Chase putting up a lot of points that I don't think he'll get quite the same production this week.
You don't think so? Well, I mean, he scored 53 points. I don't think so either. But you don't think he'll get a really strong RB1 point base this week, Achane?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think he's going to come back to earth because he's still splitting time, and now they're playing Buffalo on the road. That's just a much tougher spot. I think Miami will probably be throwing more this week where they were running more last week.
Yep. And I'll be curious to see, what do you think about Joe Burrow up against Tennessee this week? You think that's going to be his bounce back game?
It could be. Tennessee is a defense that gives up a lot through the air and not much through the ground. And it seems Burrow is maybe fully healthy this week. So Cincinnati could come out firing, which could help Scott with Ja'Marr Chase, or it could help Jared with Burrow, or it could help them both. So that'll be a matchup to watch for sure.
Yeah. So Jared had Gibbs in at his RB2 spot, which he, in hindsight, is kicking himself because Montgomery went off last night with three touchdowns, and that was on his bench. And so there's a point swing there that would be pretty nice in Jared's favor. That being said, coming off again on such a hot week with having the matchup upside that you described, I don't think Jared is suffering much because of it. So this will be a game to watch, but I think that Jared is got the edge on it.
Yeah, injuries are so tough. And when players come back from injury, it's so tough because Montgomery missed last week. I just maybe the last 2 weeks, Montgomery missed, or at least the last one, I forget. But you know, he came back and had like a bigger workload than normal. Where you know we're watching it, wondering why isn't Dibbs getting more work here, and because Montgomery was getting so much. But then in the exact same game, Aaron Jones comes back from injury and has a much smaller workload than normal. So I don't know if it's a, you know, it depends on the type of injury, and you just got to really analyze, mm-hmm. Is it a hamstring or a bruise or whatever, or if it's just a training staff thing. But it can be so tough to make that choice of what are you doing with these guys when you're looking at, do I plug them in my lineup or not?
All right. Who's your money on that one?
I am going to take Jared in that one.
All right. That'll take us over to, let's say, Charles, our 0-3 former champion, up against Brian, who is 2-1, currently sitting about 20 points north in projection to win. Got 10.5 points out of Christian Watson last night in the Packers game. And other than that, let's see their stack. We've got Patrick Mahomes up against the New York Jets. Now, granted, they are in the Jets' home territory. I don't think it matters. I think that this is the week for Patrick to be his magical self run right through their Jets' secondary. I think that... we've got Justin Jefferson, same deal, up against Carolina, poised to go big this week. So I'm really looking excited to watch Brian's team this week. That being said, you know, Josh Allen's up against the Miami matchup, and so that could be fun to see what happens there. And of course, Mostert, that's an exciting momentum situation for Charles right now. So. Between him and Eckler, I think that the running back stack over on Charles' side this week is strong. And if he gets out of maybe Metcalf up against the New York Giants, he may see a lot of points there as well. That may be enough to overcome the stack that I think that Brian has. What do you think?
Yeah, it'll be you know, Brian could get Saquon Barkley back this week. Charles could get Austin Eckler back this week, but. I think no matter what, I'm going to lean towards Brian's side on this one because Charles has two guys in his lineup in Nelson Aguilar, who is a third wide receiver and kind of like the fourth passing option in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And Kareem Hunt is the, you know, kind of number two out of three running backs in Cleveland. And it's like, those are guys you don't want to have to be starting in your lineup, but you know Charles is having to start those guys. So you know, just from that perspective, I would definitely lean towards Brian's side in this one.
Well, I believe that takes us to myself up against Jared. I am 2-1. He is our other 0-3. Currently, I'm projected north about 17 points, 18 points. Got a deplorable performance out of Dylan. I've been ready to break up with him for a while. And I've just been waiting for Brees to get healthy and was hoping for one more week, and that did not play out. And so I've got a 1.1. That might as well be a zero. You don't score less. If you score less than three as a running back, can we just call that a zero? I'm going to call it a zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but fortunately, Dobbs got all the action, although limited there in Green Bay, and had enough catches and yards to put up a pretty respectable score for my. WR3 spot. Not bad at all. So hopefully my wides will carry me again like they did this last week. I am concerned because I think that, like I said, Kelsey going up against the Jets and being the favorite target of Patrick, there's going to be a high score there. And of course, this week, unlike previous weeks where I've benefited from the offense of Miami, my opponent has Tua throwing the ball. And so those score penalties offset, if you will. And every touchdown that he throws, we both benefit from. So I'm not necessarily going to be running up the score.
Yeah, you know, from you know, backseat driver Monday morning or Friday morning quarterback perspective, I think Breece Hall is going to shove this one down your throat for starting A.J. Dillon over him. Because I think Breece has been definitely on a road to better health. And I think you're going to have a really good player in Breece Hall the rest of the year. even though as an overall offense, they're miserable now that Aaron Rodgers is down. I think Breece Hall is going to be really, really good. That being said, I think you saw the stronger team here. I think that the projection is fair in terms of the difference, but I think you do, yeah, you do have some risk where Jared has some players who could blow up with, you know, Higgins to go off against Tennessee. We've already talked about their weak pass defense, and then Deebo Samuel and George Kittle facing Arizona are also always a risk to put up multiple touchdowns each. So this is one that I would favor your side of it, definitely. But by no means is this one going to be over until it is over.
Yeah.
Especially because he's going to have Kelce playing late against you.
Yeah, and for the record, I definitely put Breece Hall in. He is on my starting lineup. I was just hoping to make a choice later as to who he would sub in for. Well, that being said, I am not so brazen to taunt the fantasy gods either with a guaranteed W.
You're definitely due for some regression.
I know. That's the issue. That's the issue.
Yep.
But 3-1 sounds a lot stronger than 2-2, you know?
It really does. But you know what? From the other side, I will take 2-2 because that sounds so much better than 1-3.
That is correct. And speaking of our rankings here, do we have some power ranking comments to boot to go with these this week that we can expect in our inbox?
Not yet, but I'll see if I can get that done this afternoon. Been doing some catch up this week, and hopefully I can get to updating our lead stats page and fire up some power rankings, or at least send out the power rankings, even if it's presented without comment. We shall see.
I mean, that's like taking a zero from a running back who scored 3. I'd rather not see them at all. I can look at my own rankings on page 4, and I think I speak for the league commissioner. But don't worry, I'm going to go edit this podcast that I produce every week and syndicate and write for. But yeah, no, I understand. If you can't come up with 12 funny sentences, then it's a lot. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, it's tough work. those are highly curated and
Carefully thought out. When I write the try to come up with a theme for the episode and write, I just stare at my keyboard for a while and I'm just like, be funny. And sometimes it you know, the muse strikes and sometimes she doesn't. But
well, you really do a great job.
Well, no need.
It's always entertaining. I always enjoy.
Well, I appreciate you stroking my ego, and I will look forward to doing the same after I see our power rankings later.
That's what we do.
What else to expect? You're on the greatest fantasy football league in the world. This is my podcast. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.